Joe Raven.
Equipment Wielder. Blue Caster, Ishida Zazeel.
Respecting the source material. Green Caster, Zenshi. Actually White.
Black Caster, Ransack.
Loyal and Loud.
Pink Caster, Lightred.
Broadcasting loud and opinionated perspectives across the internet.
Radio Sentai.
Cast Ranger on air.
Welcome to episode 26 of Radio Sentai Cast Ranger.
Jeez, are we here already?
Are we doing this again?
I was going to say, obligatory how we've been doing this that long comment.
We've almost done a complete season of something.
Yeah. Well, some shows are 26.
Yep. We're at the halfway point. Shit's not quite serious yet, but, you know, we've established new powers.
We're going to leave this one on a vital cliffhanger so someone will pick us up for another season.
Hmm.
Today is when we get our hyper form.
I was going to say, when do we get our battleizer?
Kamen Rider Gaiden!
So, this being a very plot-heavy episode of Gaim, we're just going to make this a short run and not do a special topic this week. So, I'm sorry if that lets down any of you, but it's hard to think up topics on the fly.
This was a very, very important episode of Gaim. I'm sure you'll forgive us because we need to have a very in-depth conversation.
I was
going to
say,
this.
You mean fundamentally the last?
Yeah. Okay, so we're talking about Gaim episode 46 and Tokuger 29.
Boy, did shit happen.
I love how I keep having to check what episode of Tokuger we're on because goddamn the show.
I don't care enough to remember episode numbers.
I don't care enough to remember episodes. I try and forget most of them.
So this is what we would normally, in a TV show, consider to be a season finale episode.
Yet we're totally doing this again next week, so that is not the case.
Yes, it is entirely... Well, of course, as we've mentioned in Rider shows, the final episode tends to lead into the movie. And I think that's what they're going with.
Not always.
Not always, but I think that's where they're going with it here, because...
Well, they're leading into the Gaim Drive Movie Wars.
Okay, but isn't Evil Coda Jam or something like that? Who's the...
We don't know
exactly. We like
exactly.
to speculate that Jam is Coda from another alternate world.
Because the story with Evil Coda from the movie was... The movie is the separate timeline, and Coda from the TV show is Gaim Yami.
I cannot wait to see that be explained.
Okay.
That's interesting. Kogane.
Why am
Mars
I evil
did it.
Suddenly? Okay.
I wikied it. Mars did it.
My point is, this would be a satisfying conclusion to the show.
For sure.
There was one episode more, but this seriously felt like the season finale.
Which is what I said. Finale. It's fundamentally the finale of Gaim.
And I'm just going to get my one criticism out of the way. Because, fundamentally, I liked the way it ended. I liked the content of what it was in. I have one simple criticism for the episode on the whole.
Okay.
And that is, it was way too quickly resolved.
Yeah.
Okay.
This could have...
I won't disagree with that.
There are times when a, pardon the term, Dragon Ball Z fight...
That's exactly what this was.
...is necessary.
There was no Spirit Bomb episode?
No, it's not even that. It's just, they're building up to this fight, and let's be perfectly clear about what that fight was. A 10-minute fight.
Yeah.
15-minute fight, something like that.
Well,
10 minutes.
You could tack on the end of the previous episode.
Sure, but it was basically 15 minutes in this episode of Kota versus Kaito. And then they just sort of threw the ending at us at the end, and... It was resolved. That was it. I just sort of felt like this could have been spread out a little bit more. The fight could have been a lot more epic. I liked the way it ended.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll get to that. I just sort of felt like there could have been more to the fight. There could have been a bit more to the final confrontation that we've been building up to for these past 40-something episodes.
Well, the thing is, the part of the battle from episode 45 was the build-up. It was like, you know, trading form upgrades and all that. Mm-hmm. And then this was... We're in our final forms, let's settle this.
What was really weird, though, is that, like, as the actual fight in between Code and Kaido was going on, in the alternate world, the other world that Maya was watching, they were having the exact same fight, just in their based forms.
That was, that because the world she was in was like the world of infinite possibilities, and when that started happening, that was the future becoming clear.
I was about to say that's not an alternate reality, that's an alternate possibility.
Yeah.
That's simply, this fight can go a whole bunch of ways, and I'm basically watching the fight in all ways at once.
And then as it slowly weeds out to the one inevitable
and the prevailing
ending.
Conclusion was the prevailing conclusion.
Exactly.
But she was watching all movements up until that prevailing conclusion.
Yeah.
I was very sad with the conclusion in a way.
I have to, on that note, I believe quite the opposite about your opinion. I don't feel like the fight wasn't long enough in that when we tried to wrap everything up, some more than other points were wrapped up way too quickly.
Yeah.
Like, there were some things that were wrapped up that I was just kind of like, wait, like, why did you stop there?
My entire criticism of this episode is that it went by way too quickly and things just seemed sort of in passing. They happened and then move on.
Which is to say, I don't think that fight needed to be any longer.
Yeah,
I feel like that, what screen time that fight did take up took away from any sort
explaining
of vocal of exposition that was necessary as per the conclusion of what happened.
I just kind of felt like this very drama-heavy show, this show that's so very loaded with intrigue, ended in a very
flat-out way,
drama-less, slightly flat way. The content, again, of the episode was good. It was the delivery that I have a problem with. I felt it fell a little flat as an episode, but as a conclusion to the story, I felt as though it worked.
Okay.
My complaints are purely technical, and it's about
I feel like I agree with you on that. I just feel like where we see things are different.
The way I see it, yes, this whole show has been about drama and intrigue up until the hilt, but at this point, everyone's left the city. It's down to Kota and Kaito. I think they chose the correct artistic direction to make the final fight just a flat out you, me, no drama. Let's settle this.
And a lot of the time, and you heard their really cool bantering against one another. You know how Kaito was saying, "Oh, I hate this world that forces people to feel power."
No, that's exactly what I've been saying for the last few episodes. That though his means are not exactly effectively communicated, there is a seed of pure intent deep within what he's trying to do.
No, he is inherently, despite everything that he's done, there is a shred of innocence left in him that, despite the fact that he pursues power, we find that he pursues power out of necessity.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to pursue power. He doesn't get off on power like I think we kind of felt like he did. He pursues power out of necessity because he lives in a world that forces people to either rise to the top or be mediocre.
Exactly.
And that's interesting. I just would have liked to heard a bit more of it. I felt like he said the lines he needed to say, Kota said the lines he needed to say, stabby, stabby, done.
You know what I think it is? I think this boils down to how well of a character Kaito is from a writing sense. He wants all of this stuff, but he's very, very bad at communicating it through means other than fighting.
Sure, and I kind of feel like at the end he should have had his one final moment of clarity where he makes himself perfectly clear to Kota and where he stands. I just kind of felt like I would have let that moment breathe a little bit more. I would have let it simmer a bit more. I wouldn't have had it be so quick and in passing.
I think the fact that we see his good intent is echoed further through Mai's dialogue in that, in the fact that she is agreeing with both of their perspectives. Although I guess the interesting thing about that is I've heard a lot of people complain about Mai being effectively removed from having any agency in the outcome of this war over the golden fruit.
I feel like we could move on to the actual discussion, and that way we can better explain ourselves in what we're talking about without being so cryptic about it.
Sure. All right. So, let's just basically go through what happens in this episode, just, not detail by detail, but, you know, in our usual summarizing.
One thing I noticed, though, that was funny is when he goes Kiwami, for the first time, someone actually tries to attack the fruits.
And they defend him.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I like the attack Durian, the pointy one.
Anyways, as Ichi said, it's Raccoon City, everybody's been evacuated from it, and it's just Kaito and Kota in the middle of the city, duking it out, having an all-out. And as we said, quite a bit of this episode was them kind of fighting. And surprise of surprise, Kota wins the golden fruit, which isn't really in... It looks so photoshopped in, oh my god.
It's just funny watching him try and eat in this imaginary fruit.
I know, it's just he's holding nothing in his hand, and you can even see in his hand that the way his hand is shaped, it doesn't perfectly fill his hand. It looks as though it's been shoop-de-whooped in.
Which, of course.
But it's a tokusatsu, and as I've said in my diatribe about why I like tokusatsu, it's least budget for best effect.
Hey, you missed an important point.
What?
Kaida's dead.
Well, yeah, Kaido's dead.
He lost. Of course he's dead.
I made a funny realization watching
Summary Lane.
The funny thing about that is, like, this show prominently features dudes who, like, cry a lot over the dudes they just stabbed and left for dead. Michi did it to Kota, Kota did it to Kaito.
Mm-hmm.
And another interesting thing is, Kaito cared enough about Yoko, who he actually didn't care enough about, to, like, you know, pick up and presumably bury somewhere. Kota kind of just leaves Kaido exactly where he lies to rot.
His home planet needed him.
Exactly.
Needs me.
You'd think the fucking god with the golden fruit could just look over at Kaito and go,
"But yeah,
now you're buried."
But yeah, okay, fine, whatever. But he bites into the imaginary golden fruit and he becomes Mamoru Chiba from Sailor Moon.
He becomes the Disney prince.
He becomes the Prince of Earth and marries Princess Usagi and...
Someone chop the Odango on Mai.
They go to another
fucking
planet.
Fucking I'll do it.
Koja has a fantastic little solution. Lane clarified something for me, and I'd like you guys to back him up on this if he's right or wrong, but he takes Helheim and puts it on another planet.
He says, fuck it, let's go to Mars or something.
Yeah, exactly. My home planet needs me, and I'm bringing y'all with me.
Not so much Helheim in its entirety.
Just the context of it?
No, the parts of Helheim that had encroached onto Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But like, Helheim is still there.
The important part is he took Sagra, which was the consciousness of Helheim, so he's basically taken Helheim to wherever.
He's banished Helheim to another planet.
Yeah.
Well,
Moon, 1,000 years Moon.
Sagra essentially didn't go with him. It was just a moment of game's over here. Might as well move on to the next place. And Sagra moved on, and Helheim went with him.
No, but
Kota only took the parts of Helheim that had already encroached upon his world.
I feel like that's something that could be open for interpretation.
No, because Sagra is just continuing the chain with some other planet.
No, but we don't know what... No, that's the planet they're on.
The chain goes on the planet they're on.
The new golden fruit spawns on this planet that they're on that has some weird aliens on it and blue fire.
Yes.
Whatever.
Yes. But at any rate... So yeah, the Prince Mamoru Chiba, Kota, and his moon princess go to this new planet where they plan a new civilization with all they brought with them, and they've left everyone to just sort of continue.
Work their own shit out.
Okay, yeah. I thought that was like the dumbest thing ever because he took something on a very metaphorical level and tried to make it real. In
mean?
That he, the whole thing was he packed up Helheim and went to, and as he said, the darkest planet I can find. Well, why do you want to shroud yourself in darkness? Because we will light the way. And I was like, that's not how that works.
We are wearing white clothes. We will shine the bitch up.
Golden fruit. We will make a new sun.
But that.
All this place needs is some wallpaper.
They've explicitly said that the golden fruit has the power to paint the world in your image, so they're going to reformat the fucking planet.
Listen, I see this as
he found the most uninhabitable, lifeless planet he could and went there.
Guys. HGTV just gave him a whole new show. he's deepest, darkest planet makeover. He's the golden fruit has given him the power of fabulous. An interior design, and he's going to go to another planet, and he's going to make it fabulous.
Sure.
He's got his own HGTV show now. He's going to reno planets for the rest of his life.
of his immortal life.
Yes.
I'd watch it. I think that's a game called Goddess, by the way.
Satsuna FCA goes around terraforming planets.
No, but what I really...
Genesis!
No, but what was awesome was the fact that, like, he became, like, this god or whatever like that, and then Sagara was like, alright, well, you won, so now you gotta rule this planet the way it's supposed to be, blah, 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 and Kodos just like, no.
I'm Jesus.
Why do I have, no, no, he's literally like, why do I have to listen to you? And Sagara's like,
no, I'm sorry, and he's like, no, I'm sorry, me and Eve here are gonna go leave the garden.
Yeah, just, that's exactly what this was.
It just sort of...
So I was like, I like that. Wasn't expecting you to say that.
That was was pretty cool.
Which is stupid, because here's the question. You decide to come along and play this really, really crazy cosmic Darwinism, this cosmic game of Darwinism with these people. You put them through absolute hell. You make sure that they are the most uncomfortable that they've ever in their life, and you've killed their loved ones indirectly. All right, so you're going to do what I say, right?
No!
What the... Jesus!
He flat out said, fuck you!
I saw this really funny picture of just, like, someone took a...
been doing that?
But it was...
I guess!
It was a picture that Toku Memes put up where, like... I'm not going to use the actual word that they use because it's offensive, but pretty much it's just him with his arms out with this, like, kind of O face. Just the tagline, what are you going to do now, bitch? You know, it was just...
But yeah, apparently all the previous civilizations that Sagara has tricked...
Sagara was a really great guy, apparently.
You know what it was? You know what it must have been? None of them were smart enough to figure out who or what he actually was.
None of them were highly evolved enough. He even stated he's not quite sure where evolution was going to take the human race at this
but
point.
But see, though, Sagara told them what
he's
he gotta was.
He's got to give them the diatribe at the end, explaining everything. He literally has to out himself.
To be fair, Sagara was a little peeved. Only just kind of, so now you have to do this. What? No, I'm not doing that. And he just went on about, but you need, you know, to destroy before you can have your new beginnings. Or I don't. I didn't expect that. Okay.
Do it.
It's just like.
What are you going to do now? I'm saying you do not plan.
That's the moment when Willy Wonka flips out on Charlie and Charlie gives him the gobstopper back. And he's like, you win! 1 million years, darkest planet you can find.
Million years, moon.
Yeah.
Million years, Morty.
Coda and Mai, 100 years, million years.
100 years, MayanCoda.com. That's right, MayanCodaAdventures.com, 100 years.
The newest porn site online.
Yes!
Can that happen?
MayanCodaAdventures.com, 100/100 years. 100 years of porno,
100
guys.
Years later, right, and they intersect with Kyoryuger.
And they still look the same. No, but anyways, it calls into question a few, you know, structural integrity problems with the entire bullshit game that Sagara has been playing. But as I said, it's an ending that fits what they've been building. I've been going on and on and on about Judeo-Christian imagery and heavy epic themes of determinism and stuff like that.
That one thing, that one line they literally just lifted straight out of the Book of Genesis.
Do you know
Be
what?
Fruitful
no.
and multiply!
As sad...
I sat there, and no, he even preceded that comment with...
Coming from the snake? I don't know how much this means.
It's probably not my place to say it as the serpent, but...
Be fruitful and multiply, you crazy kids!
I laugh.
You know what was interesting? Out of the three people vying for the bloody fruit, I'm still not even convinced that Coda actually had any romantic interest in Mai, whereas the other two did.
He just loves everyone.
So, yeah, I'm bummed about Kaido's death.
Let's rephrase that. Okay. Not sure if he had any romantic interest in her.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you're 100% sure she had romantic interest in him.
Oh, yeah, certainly. I'll buy that. But...
so,
well, I guess we have to multiply now.
Guys,
she's just sitting there like, yay!
Lynn's okay. Point.
I guess I should have just assumed. I knew Kaido was probably going to die from this. I wish he didn't. I wish they kind of, you know, resolved.
How the hell
we just cut the fruit in half? We each get a half. I'll go to some new planet and start new civilization. You stay here and do whatever the fuck you want with it.
How would they have let him to drive if Kaito had successfully taken over the world?
But instead it ends up with Kaido dying in Koda's arms, but before dying he just looks up at him. You're pretty good.
Brofist.
That's literally
now,
what that
dog.
Was in a fucking nutshell. Kevin's just giving me this, yeah face, but it's...
You watch, they'll do a director...
You're pretty good.
Oh, God.
No.
You know what they could do because they've done it before? Director's cut ending.
Oh, no. Fuck no!
Dude.
Kaito wins.
Dude, Kaito's final moment. You're the man now, dog.
Pretty much. Yeah, it's just that moment of recognition.
I did like, though, which
was
pretty sweet, especially in the, like, infinite possibilities world, where literally just Gaim just fucking broke up a piece of his Banisphere
you
and
broke
just
my dick
fucking
blade.
Stabbed him, and then you just see him proceeding to impale him further with it, and I'm just like, oh. But I did like that attack that Kaito did on Kiwami. Like, I thought he was, like, done for sure, and I'm like, no.
I'm like, he's not. Leaking fruits. What, his chest plate should be, like, empty of color.
And Kiwami's just like, go, gauntlet.
Yeah, and then breaks off.
The power of braces.
Can I make a comment about Kaito? It has absolutely nothing to do with this episode. It has something to do with Kaito and his design.
Yeah.
I was doing some research on Kaito because Kaito interests me as a character. And I looked up, and I did some research on what thought processes went into the design of his armor. And I found out something rather interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know the visor particularly of his armor?
Mm-hmm.
You know what that's based to look like? Aviator goggles.
Really?
He is the Red Baron.
Nice.
He is the second banana Red Baron, which is why he's based after a Germanic knight.
Nice.
Horns and all.
That makes so
perfect
sense.
Perfect for you, Kevin.
There you go.
He's a World War I flying ace.
No, what was clinched to me the most was Paul's just like, yeah, he's the second banana. Wow.
It would have been awesome if they
Bravo,
gave him some...
Bravo, Toei!
They should have given him some sort of arms with a flying power. Like, well, he did have Suika that one time, but he never flew with it.
Yeah.
He had the dandeliner.
Yeah.
That flies.
He flew on the dandeliner a little bit.
No, but no, he was partially inspired by the Red Baron.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It was really cool.
I will now proudly pose, like, Baron in the center of, like, my collection until I get Kiwami. Then once I get my Kiwami figure arts, that's going to be the center of my entire collection because... Fuck.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
We say that every episode.
It is. My God.
One other question I had watching this episode, as Mai was giving Coda the golden fruit, I'm just thinking to myself, isn't she kind of fused with the fruit? Once she gives it to him, what even is she now?
Transcendent.
Goddess.
Sure.
Same reason that Roshiro's wife wasn't actually dead.
Okay.
Transcended physical body.
Anyways, cuts to...
I have a comment on Roshiro's queen that I'll get to in a little bit.
Cuts to 3 months later. Apparently, Zawami picked itself back up from where it was
eventually
before.
Everywhere has to.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, all those plants and monsters completely poof.
So, yeah, there's this really cool, which I actually liked. This was a nice little touch that I did that I liked. It just shows all these, like, missing people fly posters everywhere. And the worst part is you just see Jinouchi post one up of Hase going, I don't know where you are, but I hope you come back soon. I'm like,
no!
He still doesn't
thing
know.
Where nobody
no,
ever
no
out of
told
only,
him.
Out of everyone who was there when Hase died, Kodo was present, and the Energy Riders were present.
And that was it.
And all of it, dirt!
Well,
there
is now
technically out of the people who were there when Hase died, only two of them are still alive. Only one of them is still present in Zawame. Mm.
So we finally get to see what we're now calling hashtag Takatora lives, our Lord and Savior.
Well, no, this is the more important thing. This is the more important thing in the episode. We finally found out that Charmant is open from 11 a.m. till 8 p.m. at night.
Thank God. That was a vital plot point.
I paused that and I was like,
I know why.
I was like, all right.
I know why you're interested in that.
Why?
It's Panera.
Yep.
It's Kamen Rider Panera.
Just imagine we came into our work the next day and we just
Pardon!
Hi, I'm late. Pardon?
You have to refuse to hire someone because they're an Aquarian.
No, he either lets you go. He either lets you go or lets you stay, depending on what your sign is.
I want to go into. I work at a. Me and Pink Caster in our secret identities. We work at a Panera Bread.
I call them the Paneros.
I want to go in cosplaying Orin.
Well, shake your head.
Or just put on one of those hat things he
for
wears.
For ball caps?
Yeah, whatever they're called. Mm-hmm.
But anyways, yeah, so Takatora's alive. That
I never gave up hope, buddy.
Yeah. You know,
I never gave up hope.
No. See, I didn't either. I did hope. Oh, I hope he is alive. That'd be swell because I love Takatora, but I think he's dead.
I explicitly said, while I perfectly understand if they left him dead because it would serve the plot to do so, I would like them to bring him back because he was a good character.
And that's just it. Every fucking person
was full of wishful thinking. Just no one really had faith.
This proves that the power of wishful thinking is a powerful force for change.
That's just it. Everyone's like, no, he's gonna be dead. He's gonna stay dead because he has absolutely no relevance to the plot. And I said, that doesn't fucking matter.
And it turned out he does.
That's not what it's about.
But as of right now, like, we think this. Apparently, like, he was just found drifting, like,
some random boat
picked him up. But his body is fine, but he might be brain damaged. But apparently, Coda decides
but
to have
Coda
a little talk.
Him.
No, we don't know that for sure yet.
Why wouldn't
oh,
he?
Oh, no.
Well,
all he did was wake up, look over at Michi, and just go,
listen, buddy, he was inside Takatora's mind. Do you honestly think that
before going up
to him in his own mind, he didn't do a little fixing
maybe
just to make
before
sure his miracle was possible?
Okay, before we talk about supporting arguments for that, we need to mention what happened. So, Coda, broadcasting live from fucking Super Mars out in space somewhere.
Fuck nowhere other universe.
Broadcasted himself into Takatora's brain to tell him that, yeah, you need to wake up because you still have a purpose. You need to be a bro with
your little brother's a dipshit.
You need to be with him, be a brother, and make sure that he
can
turn out.
Okay, going to Michi now. I wouldn't say that he's good again, but he is trying to now. Like, he feels bad for everything he's done, so he feels like Zach. He watches like Zach and all them dancing
and
stuff
we
like that.
We should mention that
Zach's still alive.
Yeah,
but
he's still 3 months later, still got a cast.
Everyone love is alive.
Yeah. Well, I think he might have just actually gotten fucked up.
I won game!
The two characters Kevin likes survived.
Can I just make
I was going to say, Kaido died purposefully, but I'll let that
so,
one
but
slide.
Zach quickly,
2 out of 3.
Zach quickly goes up to Michi and he's just like, what?
Pass.
No, Michi, dance with us again. Like, I know you've done a lot of
I
bad
need
shit,
someone
but,
to talk about
and,
the old days
and Michi,
with.
And Michi's just like, no, I can't go back.
I've
done too much.
And there was a little thing they threw in a background conversation about the possibility of Michi being faced with, you know, legal action.
Oh. Can I just...
For what he did. And somebody else going... No, no matter what, it's gonna get explained away as he was made to do it by the overlords.
Yeah.
Can I just say something right now? This is gonna sound really cold and uncharacteristically conservative of me. He deserves legal action.
He does.
He did a lot of really stupid shit.
But the problem is they would never be able to prove it in court. They would just get off on either insanity or just fucking those things.
That's not the point. That is not the point. The point is I felt like he got off way too easy.
He did.
He got off way too easy. And this whole, oh, he's got to live with it for the rest of his life bullshit. No. He's done some changing, don't get me wrong, and he's shown that he's been slightly rehabilitated and he's at least still got a conscience that's woken up slightly.
You know he's sad because his hair is flat again.
Yeah.
Well, he's wearing a hat.
That isn't it. The feathering hair was at the bottom.
He's done too much. He's had many moments that lead up to him being reformed to a certain degree. I agree with that. But everyone's being far too nicey-nice to him.
Because children.
I hate that. That's the reason for some shit.
Also, for the most part, I think in a lot of cases they're just like, okay, everything's over. It's all over and done with. And we've lost way too many friends at this point. Let's kind of
salvage who's left.
We don't want to completely say, oh, one of the guys who's been with us since the beginning. Sure, he ended up on the wrong path, but let's kind of...
It just all seems once, very...
We don't need to lose another friend.
Guys, it all seems very stock anime friendship moral.
Once again, it's like my real life. No matter how much stupid shit Dave and Tom do to each other, I always try and make them stay friends.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like I said, it just sounds like another, like... rose-colored anime bullshit friendship moral where you did matters anymore as long as everything turned out okay. No, friendships don't last.
It's not quite that. It's more along the lines of our friendship is strong enough that we're willing to forgive. It's not just forget everything that happened. It's we forgive you, which I think is a lot more meaningful.
Which, to be honest, no matter what anyone had to say about Michi, no one holds a candle to Coda. And just the level of, I forgive you,
yeah.
Despite everything.
He died for Michi's sins!
You know what, guys, though? You're missing the most important point. Michi does have a heart. You know why? Because he brought Takatora flowers.
That's true.
He brought him flowers.
I'm sure he's very contrite, but the fact stands, he betrayed his race... over nothing.
It'd just It'd be funny though if Takatora looks over. Oh, he brought me flowers, and he's like, "Yes, Nissan did. Those are my least favorite." I know.
I'm allergic to those flowers. They're from Helheim.
Oh God! And he's just like, then you just see him go, "Bee bee 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 bee."
No.
And Kana just goes to Michi's head. What the? What did you do?
Like, Coda remote access from space knocks Michi unconscious so we can talk to him in his dream. What the hell?
The fuck, man?
No, but... Oh,
Coda-san, you're alive!
No, I was saying before that, yes, Michi's done some terrible shit, and yes, some of it is his fault, but if you follow the logic behind his decisions throughout the series, you can almost kind of understand it. Like, watching Roshuo take a shit ton of nuclear missiles and beam them to North America... and decide, should I fight that?
That's not what he was deciding, though.
No, that was a... Once he saw that, he was like, you know what? I've made the right decision.
Kind of on the fence before that. No. Before that, it was very much just these guys are really powerful. I'm going to sit back and I'm going to watch this and look for my chance. Then he saw that, and from that point on, he was very...
Listen,
Michi made the right choice.
We're fucked.
Michi has been acting under a misplaced arrogance since the very beginning of the time that he became a villain. He learned some truths. He got himself some knowledge that no one else thought of, and he basically made himself part of the conspiracy.
I wouldn't even call it arrogance until the point where he started acting as the administrator of humanity. Before that, it was more he was an opportunist.
He was jelly of Kota. The whole thing was he thought he was better than Kota, and he couldn't understand why everything was happening to and for Kota.
I'll agree with that, because there was that comment where he saw Kiwami for the first time and was like, why does Kota keep getting stronger?
Deep down, he is a deeply selfish and arrogant person. In the end, this all comes down to a person who saw a girl that he liked having feelings for another person, and all of that world coming to an end bullshit just sort of became fuel for the fire.
Oh, exactly.
Make no mistake, this was jealousy of a lover spurned from the very
beginning.
Exactly.
That's why when he became the administrator of humanity, his first project was grab my, save her. Everyone else.
And he basically decided to set him up as the king who was going... the white knight who was going to run in, save Mai, and then have a nice percentage of the planet at the end. I don't see where all this redemption and conscience is coming from, because quite frankly, he was doing just fine, was better as, and should have continued to be a thoroughly reprehensible character.
While I agree with that, As obvious as it is to say, I think the whole thing where Coda was willing to die to try and set Michi back on the right path was just the wake-up call he needed. I would argue on your side that it shouldn't have jostled him from his primary objective of being the influential one who gets Mai in the end. I think eventually when that happened, the part of him that used to genuinely care about Coda kind of woke back up after forever.
I think we needed a genuine example of human evil that came from an innocent place, and we didn't get that. I feel like a more real...
I think they were meaning to give us that, but if you search deep within Michi's character, there really wasn't it until right after he kills Coda?
I guess my whole complex is a person who had that in them deep down in the end wouldn't have acted half as bad as they did up until their final fall. And I really just believe that Michi should have just been all bad up until his downfall. I think he should have been just a nice human example of a villain.
You know what I think is the perfect juxtaposition between Coda and Michi? Coda was a person who always acted on heart and passion and what he thought was right, whereas Michi always acted on what he thought was the logical, correct action. He was just fed information that dictated to him what the law... an incorrect logical answer.
I don't like the idea that all of this just boils down to Helheim and Sagar are manipulative and evil.
I wouldn't argue that Sagar directly manipulated any of them.
I think he did. I think you couldn't argue any other way.
Well, not as directly when it comes to Michi.
I think this is all... No, and that's what I mean. Michi is a true example of not unmanipulated, but... believably unmanipulated by his own standards,
yeah.
Human evil. Human evil that is just stewing in its own arrogance and just, then has a nice fall.
Can we just talk about that thing that I just noticed here?
Tell me.
The three main guys, the three people who were in the running at the tail end of this, the three different motivating factors for humankind, mm-hmm. but each one of them represents a different one.
Pride, compassion, and...
I was going with emotions, logic, and just strength. Kaito was
will.
The body.
Will.
Yeah.
No, will. You mean will.
That would be the one.
Coda had the will to go on and do what was necessary. You're absolutely right. Coda had the compassion to do what was necessary, and Michi had the logic to do what he felt was...
the right choice.
No, I understand that, but... in the end, he is the character who is an example of the human's misconception of what is the right choice.
Yep.
He is the misconception of everything I think I'm doing is right, but it is actually wrong.
Yeah,
again,
that's exactly
but morally it is reprehensible.
That's exactly what Michi's character has been the whole time.
I know that.
Ever since early episodes when it came down to Yggdrasil's manipulating us, we shouldn't use the belts, but there are people I need to save. No, you shouldn't use the belts. That was the first telling when it comes to Michi's character.
I know that. I guess I'm just used to stories where characters who portray these, you know, traits and have them become part of their characters, they get their just desserts for the deeds that they do. And I find that in modern media, people have a lot of, well, not modern media, but in modern entertainment, like television and movies, people just have, you feel like you can define a person's change from bad to good in one single moment. Like, in this show, Michi has a moment where he goes from bad to good. It's a defining character moment, and yes, that's great, but if you want to be true to how emotions and people actually work, not a lot of people get that one defining moment where they get to choose between good and evil. A lot of people just have their choices that build up to them up until the point where it's too late, and I'm sorry, but you can't do anything about them once you've made your choices. That's life. I think a stronger moral for Michi would have been... no, you made your choices, and you're going to have yourself a downfall. You're going to have yourself a downfall, and you're going to live to basically embody the dangers of your choice that you make.
Yeah.
I don't feel as though Michi was given any responsibility for anything that he did. I think this whole... again, I say... Orin said he's got to live with the things that he's done. And yes, that's great, but I don't think that Michi has portrayed himself as a character all throughout this show as a character who would really see what he's done as evil.
So this all boils back down to you thinking Michi deserves to be punished for what he did more
Michi
than what he
has his own individual views and morals and ethics, and he should have been a character that was indicative of someone who stuck to them right to the very end and got their just desserts. I think that would have been a lot more impactful than just a person who is
our
friend.
You're saying
he
didn't have enough conviction in his own viewpoint.
Yes, and in the end, the story didn't have enough guts to go through with his decision's final outcome. I felt it would have been more impactful if Michi just got
one. I see points for and against what you're saying, but I think we've wasted too much time on this anyway.
Continue.
Well, yeah, back to the whole Takatora in his dream world getting told by Coda. Yeah, Michi's fucked up. You need to be the super best bro and be a family again.
I really like this conversation though, because it's really the like it's the conversation that we finally, you know,
can have.
Takatora and Koda have been wanting to have with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But the interesting thing to this is what you said. I'm very firmly believing in Takatora was brain damaged and Koda through his magic god powers, you know, brain fucked him back to normality.
I'm going to give my friend his brother back.
I think so too, because yes, Takatora before he got like his ass whooped by Michi, that was the last thing he saw was his brother, own brother, striking against him, and then I guess he looked, and then he looked over after waking up after all that time, looking over and seeing his brother by his side taking care of him, and you know, that would put a smile on my face too.
Yeah. Do you know and that's all well and good. Sorry, I just have a quick thing to say. But here's my question. If Koda could fix everything wrong with Takatora from across the fucking universe, why couldn't Roshuo awaken his queen when she was right next to him?
Because her body didn't exist anymore.
No, her soul that wasn't there was more the issue.
Oh, because shit. I didn't think about that.
They showed at the end how her body had literally risen from the coffin.
Not to mention the
fact... I forgot about that. Yeah, because when Mai became fused with the fruit, her body disintegrated.
Yeah.
So it would have been the same with Roshuo's queen.
Her soul wasn't there. No, I think there was, like, her remnants were...
Her body probably her was body there, was but she there. Wouldn't wake up because her soul had already split into the fruit.
Her soul had split off and gone off somewhere.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. I didn't
you
think
can't,
of that.
You can't fix it if the it's core not there. Part isn't there.
Not to mention the fact that, well, let's just put it this way. Sagara was manipulating Roshuo just as much as he was everyone else.
Yeah.
Sagara is the connecting factor between everyone important in this show. Roshuo addresses Sagara almost as someone who's equal to or even knows more than he does. He gives him he gives him the utmost respect when he sees him. He gives him a piece of the golden fruit to do whatever the fuck he wants with.
Yeah.
Sagara's been manipulating him from day one. Do you really think that Sagara, who controls Helheim, the source of Roshuo's power, and controls his very fate, is going to allow him back the thing that that's motivating him to be manipulated?
But you'd think Roshuo would have considered that possibility and maybe confronted Sagara about it.
Roshuo was too honorable and naive. He was only focused on getting his wife back. He was a husband distraught. He'll believe anything that you tell him.
I guess it's safe to assume that at some point Roshuo asked Sagara and he said, "No, nothing I can do, bro."
Exactly, and Sagara just had his fingers crossed behind his back.
Yeah.
Again, another reason why Roshuo is my very favorite character in this thing. He's set up for so much of the show as almost an endgame villain, but really, he's just another manipulated party.
Yeah.
He's super duper powerful. He destroyed North America,
yeah.
But he's just a pawn of the manipulative smart guy.
Yep. Yeah. Anyways, you were trying to say something?
Mine seems all very irrelevant and lighthearted after that conversation.
I'm very, very sorry.
No, we're getting heavy this time.
I was going to say, shit,
we're getting heavy. Get it? Because snake.
Sure. Fuck you.
The one thing that just kind of really I enjoyed a lot about this show was that despite everything that happened, and this is just Koda beaming through in this, Koda and Takatora managed to establish a friendship.
Yeah.
They became friends.
That's what I enjoyed when they first started, you know, talking to each other. I like seeing these two hang out together.
And that's what I liked about the final conversation they had. There was no, oh, it's Koda, and oh, good. Like, you know, it was comfortable. It was, they started talking as though they'd been friends for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was for the sake of plot convenience as it may or may not have been.
It felt
they
natural
were
to me.
Friends. They were speaking
despite
to each other.
Despite how many times you tried to kill me.
But that's just it. It was, but he knows that if anyone's going to forgive everyone for their fuck-ups, it's Koda.
Exactly.
So he kind of goes, no, I know well enough that you were being used by this evil, you know, without certain pieces of information.
I'm going to forgive you so hard, it's going to spill into you forgiving Michi.
But that's just it, though. It's just, so him being able to do that, Takatora was able to trust him as a reliable person.
Yeah.
And it grew into a genuine friendship.
Yeah.
Right until the end. And I really liked that.
Yeah. I mean, Koda always respected Takatora's way of doing things. I mean, he, when Takatora first started conversing with him, Kota's very first response to him was, "Oh my god, someone actually willing to listen to fucking reason." Like, when Kota started talking to him about, no, there's absolutely, positively no way that that could possibly, killing 6 billion people could possibly be the only solution possible. And Takatora, being a person who's listened to Sengoku Ryoma for so very long, went, "Durr, I never thought of it that way. Maybe my buddy's murder plan isn't such a great idea." And say, buddy, why don't you make... Like, I'm pretty sure I could find you more resources. Why don't you just make more Sengoku drivers? Nope! It's gotta be murder, you guys!
Which is really... It's really funny... It was really funny seeing Kota and Takatora, like, starting to understand each other. When less than 10 episodes ago, Takatora was like, "Hey, here's a video of your best friend dying."
And here's that video of you killing him.
I'll still never forget. No,
here's it in slow motion.
Remember that time when I like almost fucking killed you in Helheim, and that made you never want to fucking use the belt ever again?
God.
Good times, buddy.
God.
Good times.
Where would we have been if that happened?
And here's the video in reverse, watching your friend come back to life.
See, he doesn't have
only to watch you kill him again.
But the funny thing is, I just imagine Takatora, after he's woken up, trying to explain what just happened to Michi. "Yeah, Kota broadcast was in my dreams, and he told me to be bros with you again." And Michi, not even knowing that Kota had A, returned to life, B, won the golden fruit, and C, fucked off to Mars, would be, his natural response would be, "No, he's dead. I stabbed him. Go back to sleep." Just smother him with a pillow.
Yes.
You've been
just
through
fucking one flew over the cuckoo's nest. That shit,
doctor. The brain damage is really starting to show. He thinks dead people are back.
Overall, though, I thought this was a good episode. If next week's episode is like just kind of random filler, like,
well,
I thought this episode was a pretty good end to it. It didn't end the way I wanted, because if you remember, like episodes ago, I was like, okay, Kota's gonna die for the sake of the world or something. You're gonna be a martyr, which didn't
happen.
Well,
he kind of is.
I thought Kaido was going to win the fruit and use it to, you know, kind of be like a defender of the Earth. Just like, Kota's dead, but...
There is nothing in his character that says defenders of the Earth defenders.
Okay, I know, but, you know, sometimes people change. But in regards, like I always say, I'm just glad in the end... Kaido still remained a dick.
A more passive, compassionate
dick by the end, but still a dick.
He's a soft dick. Oops.
He's flaccid as all hell.
But I'm so glad the series didn't end the way I was predicting, where they pull a Ryuki and Sagar just says, "Fuck it,
oh,
goes to the next world."
Fucking god. I would have been pissed.
Yeah.
I would have been angry as fuck. That's a terrible.
I would have been understanding.
Yeah. As the worst thing you can do to end it. No. As the worst thing you can do to end a TV show is to retcon everything that happened in the show.
Yeah.
No, it's gonna be fun going to Drive and just starting Drive under the assumption that North America's still fucking gone. I thought they were at least gonna he was gonna at least like bring people back and shit, but no, North America.
Why
still
can't
gone.
We have a Mad Max-esque Kamen Rider series where there's a Kamen Rider in a car going around trying to keep
the law?
Yeah, I mean
Power Rangers.
I believe we got something to that. It was called Power Rangers RPM.
It's not a Kamen Rider show.
Okay,
it's
if you want post-apocalyptic, fucking go watch Paradise Lost for
there
fries.
You go.
Godspeed Love for Kabuto. There's
you
your post-apocalyptic thing.
I know that, but never before have we had a Kamen Rider driving around in a bitchin'-ass red hot rod car keeping the law in a nuclear wasteland. It could be Kamen Rider Mad Max. It'd be amazing.
Kamen Rider Drive needs to take place in North America.
Yeah, that's what I mean!
Keeping the law in the dead land.
Well, if you remember in the trailer, we saw explosions happening everywhere in Japan or something, so...
It's the remnants of the U.S. all warped by radiation, all coming to attack Japan.
Yeah. So, looking at the preview for next episode, it looks like it's a proper epilogue, but then I see shots of fucking Kaito and Gaim in it, and I'm like, what's
going on?
And
you know, the Kurikage!
And that was my thing. I'm almost positive this is just some sort of shoehorn tie-in, as is tradition. I'm not upset about that.
Because the way I saw it right from the get-go was, Coda is gone. Coda has fucked off to Oblivion, wherever he saw fit.
My planet needs me.
Whether or not he was in the preview or not, they sought out his twin brother to play someone else that could be him from another dimension. They wouldn't need someone else that looked like him if they didn't need him.
Oh, God. Mm. They pulled a landfill.
I'm not sure.
No, but that's what I'm saying is if they needed Coda to not come back and they just needed Sano to play Jam, they wouldn't have put Orange in the episode. But they are.
Yeah.
So for that's all we why know, they
it's
needed.
For all we know, it's an epilogue and clip show. I don't know.
But that's what I mean.
You know
so
what?
For all we know, they needed him to play.
You know what?
Else
it might be.
Looks like
it might
that
be.
Way,
it
they
might
needed
be,
it. They needed to have two of them on screen at the same time. It's basically the idea.
They could have shot that.
Maybe they're gonna pull,
but they didn't. They chose to bring his
guys,
twin.
Guys, don't talk over Lane.
We're still talking. It's. We're just honestly, they needed two of him.
No.
There's a reason they needed two of him. They probably
we'll
need
see.
Two of him on screen at the same time.
Terminator.
We'll exactly. See. But no, in the end, they're probably just going to pull the same thing like they did at the end of the 90s Spider-Man. They just gathered every single Spider-Man from every possible universe ever.
And
wouldn't
one,
that be...
And one Coda's got Doc Ock arm.
That would be amazing if they just had show Coda... Jam, who's like this alternate Coda, and then just the movie Coda, just all, and then bring back in Bujangheim for some fucking reason.
I'm the version of you that's a billionaire and invented the orange system.
Ooh. But yeah, like Lane was saying, we see Junoichi finally did the thing that I've been saying people should do for the last couple months and grabbed another fucking Sengoku driver. And now he's a Kurokage trooper.
I think he's just like, for Hase!
Yeah, that's
maybe,
exactly
maybe
it.
Maybe he finds out Hase's dead finally. No!
That's the thing
no.
I was going to mention. So now the only person in the city who knows what happened to Hase is
Takatora.
No! But if we see Koda come back, Jinochi's just going to be like, ah, and Koda's like, Hase's dead, I saw him die, get the fuck over it. And he's just going to be like, okay, I'll be Kurokage in Hase's memory, and she...
It will not happen that way.
You never know.
No, I do know. Koda would never come out and, he's dead, you fuck!
He's dead! You know your
I
best...
I killed him!
No,
unless
no, it's gonna
no.
be a scary movie 3. You know your
no.
best friend, Hase? Yeah?
He's dead!
Gone
forever!
Like,
gone.
Has the power
just
of
like
gone
your
through.
Dog! My
no,
dog's
no.
dead! I killed him on the way in to make a point!
Everyone you know around you is dying!
Like, did Koda, through the because of the power of the golden fruit, become a huge dick?
Yes!
Or
Kaino syndrome.
Or
omnipotent.
Or, and hear me out on this, the more likely person who would just flat out say it, Takatora.
I'm sorry for your loss.
But the thing is, he didn't...
My loss?
You know, I was about to say that he wouldn't know that Junoichi knew Hase, but he was supervising the whole...
Yeah!
I got it.
Beat writers.
Okay,
he
knows! I know how this scene's gonna go down.
At very least, he'd know who the fuck he was.
I know how this scene's gonna go down. So, like, Takatora's just gonna be walking around the city, and then he's gonna see, like, those, that wall of, like, missing people, see Junoichi looking at Hase's picture, and then Takatora's just gonna be like,
is this
like a memorial for the people who died? And he's like, oh, no, this is for, like, the missing people, like, for friends that, and he just looks over at him, and he'll just be like,
oh, him? Yeah, Sid killed him. Excuse me?
About that.
No,
that's
how
it's gonna
happen! He doesn't say a word, he just takes the poster
just
down.
Goes, you know it?
Just walks by. How's it going, champ? Oh, nothing. Just trying not to give up hope that my bestest buddy will one day be found.
We dressed up as reindeer and
come on,
advertised
buddy, I'm
gonna
buy you some
store.
Ice cream. We gotta have a talk.
You know what was really what's really funny about this? I didn't really see enough scenes of them together doing things that friends do to even really think that they genuinely had a friendship. They were just rival captains who decided to work together because Kaido was a fucking intimidating...
I think they were kind of little buddies.
You know what? You know what? This all needs to end with Takatora just looking at Junoichi and being like, come on, buddy, let's go get some ice cream.
See, I like to think that Hase... No.
Let's go get you a new belt.
I like to think that Hase and Junoichi's friendship really happened was when they got their belts, and Hase was like, come on, we can be fucking heroes! We can take down those fucking diamond-bearing creeps! Fucking do it! And Junoichi's like,
I guess.
Yeah,
a lot of it
would have
had to happen off-screen because I didn't really see a friendship sparking there.
whatever. Friendship wow. Sparky. Ah! Well,
Jonouchi Sparky. What's the guy's name?
Hase.
Friendship only.
Hase, just listen to me. What did Lewis say to Clark when everything looked bleak? What did Sir Edmund say to Tenzing as they struggled toward Denver's peak? We can do it. We can do it. We can do it. Me and you.
Well,
I'm a pine cone. You're an acorn.
No,
we might suck, but we'll just try.
That's the episode title, that's by it. The way.
What?
Friendship sparking.
Sure.
Friendship only.
No, I gotta make a new version of the producers. No, friendship Paul, get on writing a version of the producers called The Writers. It's just about Hase and Jonouchi trying to become the best writers ever.
No, I'm still secretly working
Hase
on our Gaon Christmas album.
Yeah,
I'm still
we need to get on that.
No, I'm still secretly working on that.
They're going to try and make it work, only to realize that they'd be more successful if they flopped.
Yep.
Step one, we find a world with a bunch of talking monkeys on it. Step two, we find it, we manipulate all of them so they become the worst people in town. Step three, I raise $2 million. Two, yes, one for me, one for you. There's a lot of little old ladies out there. Step four.
There's a lot of little old invis out there.
No, no matter how you look at this situation, anything that
click
goes
2 million
with this,
lock seeds.
Anything that goes with this speech or could go with this speech must include banging old ladies. Sakura's just got a partner in this whole thing, and some part of this whole Helheim scheme involved banging old ladies at some point. Oh. I'm telling you right now.
Sentai moving on to Tokyuger episode 29. So mainly this episode was a Schwartz heavy episode, but pretty much the premise of
heavy Schwartz.
He wanted to apparently join the Tokyugers to get revenge for Greta dying or
which
something.
Which is weird because I never really thought he gave a shit about her the whole show.
No.
Apparently he did.
He doesn't not give a shit.
But what we find out pretty much like the Sir basis of the episode is we find out that he didn't really care about joining the Tokyugers. He just wanted Akira's drill
darker. He wants what he's always wanted. Train zords.
More train.
Well, he...
Need
I
more.
Know what?
I must train harder.
You know what? I understand because we have seen what the drill Russia can do and it's pretty fucking powerful. Like,
it, not
if
even
he thinks
just for,
it can take down Zed, then
which
maybe.
It probably won't. But
yeah, well,
it's not even just the fact that it's powerful. It's the fact of what utility it offers the Tokyugers that really crippled them. But anyways, we'll get to that in a bit.
Well, yeah, so Baron Arrow's like, oh, I brought one of my bestest buddies from somewhere, the Bottle Shadow. And funny thing is, like, Kevin looks over because he's kind of, like, sort of watching it while playing something else. But he looks over and he's like, what is that, the butt shadow? And I'm like, no, he's the bottle
it's
shadow.
Bottles!
Nobody looked at it because it's like
I just
too...
I haphazardly looked up and went, bah! Why am I looking at ass shadow? Because it looked like two pant legs sticking up and just his head was the ass.
And then he proceeded to fart red.
Well, then white.
And then white.
And then
rose.
Rose.
Yep.
Get it? Because pink.
Oh! He's a bottle shadow and he went through the various types of wine?
Yes.
Oh!
Yeah, and no, this is the best part. He describes, before he attacks with either one, because
color.
Yeah, he describes the color like, oh, the elegant blue!
With all the vocabulary of a French waiter.
And then fires like a giant red beam, then describes like the awesomeness of white, and then fires a white beam out of his other side. And it's just...
Yep.
I didn't like him.
No, he was a joke.
He was
obviously.
Stupid.
Can we just get to the part in the story where, like, this evil organization of shadows just kidnaps Mr. Conductor and just takes over the Thomas world for all the trains?
Oh, okay, quick mention. So apparently recently we saw magazine scans of what the president of the Rainbow Line looks like.
Oh,
and oh my god.
Fucking bunny!
Is he Kawaii Desune? He's just this giant guy in a bunny costume.
Desune!
And I think he looks, I think he looks cute.
God, I'm like... I was just starting to genuinely enjoy this show, slightly ironically. Yes, because Akira is amazing.
Wow,
and then they pulled this bullshit.
I hope he has a puppet that's just like a little human.
Oh god, he could have a puppet!
It's a a little bunny puppet.
No, no, it's a human puppet.
It's not a puppet. It's a stick with a shirt on it. He gets Mr. Twig.
Damn it!
Mr. Twig. The guy's got Mr. Hat.
Like I said, I got a very Five Nights at Freddy's vibe from it.
Yeah.
Because that thing
That's the DLC.
Me, that thing creeps me the fuck out.
Just imagine it just lunging at you, jaw snapping.
Did you just ask me to imagine something from...
I swear to God, though, yeah. I hope when we see this person, like, we actually hear who he's voiced to. I just hope I hear... Domo! Fuck. You know what?
Takes off his hat, it's actually the guy from Deno.
I would be okay with that, actually. Yeah.
Domo.
It's Station
takes
Master.
Off the head. Yes, yeah. Takes it off. It's the Station Master. Domo.
No, no, no. You do not get to cross over my least favorite Sentai and my least favorite rider.
It already happened.
Yeah. The Denliner combined with the Tokyuger Megazord. For all of two
seconds. Right, right. The Denliner was just legs and it was shit.
Yep. Right, it was shit.
It was just like, and also the legs.
Featuring Deno.
And
why am I the legs?
I'm the dick. Why am I the dick?
He's not the dick. Kyoryuger is the dick.
Kyoryuger is the dick.
Kyoryuger was the middle train and thus the dick.
Kyoryuger was the dick. The giant Tyrannosaurus penis.
Yep. The extra long dick that straps up in his waistband.
Yeah.
So, pretty much the basis of this episode, it was typical, like, enemy wants to join, but then the one of the characters is like, I don't fucking trust you. You're gonna
rightfully
pull some
so.
Shit. Yeah. So, and of course, so. It's Akira who the one who suspects him because he's like, "This isn't how you are. Like, why would you all of a sudden want to like help us?"
So light's
just like, "Let's go eat.
Let's do lunch." which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Because unlike most stories that have that situation happening, you have a person who intimately knows the person who is applying.
Yep.
You have a person who, knows this person
yes,
personally.
Yes, and that person is Akira.
Yeah, I know, and that's what I mean. This is interesting. That normally doesn't happen in those sort of situations. Mostly it's just a person going on a gut feeling, and most people don't just...
And that person is Light.
Yeah, but we in this both. Situation, no, you've got a person who legit knows this person's personality and doesn't believe that this person would act this way.
So, and everybody promptly ignores him and just goes with the gullible one.
Which just goes to show you the Tokyugers are a bunch of Riris.
No. Yes. Light's the Riri.
Provenly so.
Everyone else was like,
everybody else is pretty Riri, except maybe Hikari.
Yeah. But anyway, so
and Hikari still just says, I'll just go with it for now.
Because Hikari just has to be the caboose in this train line. So Light takes Schwartz.
No, that's Kagura.
No, but I mean in terms of going along with the stupidity.
Hey, man, the caboose is the only one not taking it up the butt.
Arguable. So Light takes Schwartz to lunch where he's like, so, what's your deal? And Schwartz goes on and explains, I have to kill Zed to get revenge for
him. I like the lady who was running that restaurant, though.
Who was totally okay with Schwartz.
No, did you see that look she gave him?
No, I didn't.
Seriously, she serves the food, and she's like, is that ever, you guys, yeah, no, thank you very much, okay, looks at Schwartz, gives him this, the fuck am I looking at right now, look.
Is there a convention in town?
Fucking Nazis with a zipper mouth.
Let's not forget, this is the Sentai-verse, something that we have officially, like, had this conversation.
People are used to this
people
shit.
People don't give two shits in the Sentai-verse, oh, look, a kaijin.
It's like, hey, that thing where we've seen this like 38 times.
We see your
times.
Kind every week. It's like you're like two
like
steps.
Every through. Saturday night on the dot.
We have literally had to deal with 38 different Sentai teams and their respective evil organizations.
You guys
at
are
least,
more or less a
at,
minority.
At
right
least
now.
One of you every fucking time.
Oh, so again...
We're used to this shit. No.
Again, with the Zed, this is, like, funny. So, they find out, like, it's like, they think, it's like, oh, Schwartz has betrayed us and joined the Tokyo's bastard. And Zed's just like, huh, yeah, I could tell. Like, he's really shining. And I'm like, and it looks like
you
Zed's like...
You could tell the whole time that Zed knew that Schwartz was working an angle.
No, and Zed's, but no, but it, the way Zed
also,
said it, the way Zed said it, he's just like, maybe I should betray us and join the Tokyugers. Then I'll gain the power I want.
Maybe then I'll shine.
Yeah.
Emperor. Yeah. I still think it's Schwartz, though.
No, I was after thinking this
episode. No, I think they burned
that
bridge.
No, but maybe
bridge.
Because no, because I did see another magazine skit. It was actually Tokyo Ichigo. Like it was Light in his suit, and he actually was shaking hands with Schwartz. So maybe it's
that was an ad for this episode.
Oh, but then, why wasn't that actually in the episode then?
Because it was an ad. It was a picture
they
took
did do
for
the handshake.
It was
just a teaser picture.
They did a handshake.
No, but not in a suit though. It wasn't in a suit when he did it.
Well, it was a teaser. It happens all the time where they show off a new form and he's fighting a monster that he doesn't
it's
actually fight in that episode.
It's not necessarily a screen cap. It's just a publicity.
It's
picture.
Something they
yeah.
filmed to advertise.
Oh man.
Yeah. So the thing is, any idea of Schwartz being Tokyo Zero? No, he pretty much burned that bridge this episode.
Burned that bridge and then drilled its remains to dust.
Yes, that's a shame.
So speaking of drilling, so eventually Schwartz is like, yoink, and after giving, you know, actually sound tactical advice to the Tokidras to fight the Bottle Shadow, he just pulls yoink and steals the drill.
I neglected to tell you about that one move he had that could fuck over this entire plan. Oops, I'm using this opening to steal the drill rush later.
And then we get probably the coolest villain Zord I've ever seen, the Kurogane Kuriner Drill.
No, I actually, going back a bit, I liked Light's fight with Schwartz. It was actually really good and well choreographed. I liked it. Because, like, remember, when they first fought Schwartz, like...
He was
Schwartz and historically whooped
no,
their ass.
Yeah, Light even tried fighting him on his own, and he got his ass kicked. But we've seen that Light's gotten a lot stronger, and he was able to hold his own pretty fucking well against Schwartz.
Yeah,
and I was impressed.
Yeah, that sword fight was awesome.
Yeah, Light's a very formidable fighter, and I love that about him.
Yeah, okay, I'll give the show that much. At very least, they have kind of shown that slow progression in strength that Light has gone through. He's been getting steadily better at fighting as the show's gone on, and never was it more obvious than this episode while he was fighting Schwartz. But Schwartz has historically absolutely ripped them a new one every time he's fought them.
It's Kai versus Wolzard.
And then this time, they flat out showed Light and him going at it on even ground.
Yep.
Nothing will beat Light's Dronzer blade.
Dronzer train.
This,
there you go.
This Schwartz blade. Gentleman sounds an awful lot like Wolzard.
Kinda. I think Wolzard, but in the form of a
zipper
Nazi general.
Yeah. No, I've seen him before.
I guess
no,
we call him a zipperhead.
His character reminds me a lot of Wolzard from Maho Sentai Majiranger, the Sentai series that
except,
I consider to be
except
a
he probably won't turn out to be related.
No, absolutely not. But he seems like a similar character.
Yeah, but
Magic Yellow and Beat Stagger.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Beatbuster related.
The other thing that happens this episode is Hyper Tokyo Yango.
Yay!
Proving that Hyper is not Ichigo exclusive.
Yeah, Light basically goes to use the Hyper Resho against Schwartz, and Schwartz knocks it out of his hand.
With a very skillful slash, I might add. That was awesome.
It lands over by the Green Ranger. And the Green Ranger, seeing the Bottle Shadow get up, goes, oh shit, I'm actually going to use this right now.
Also proving another thing about the Hyper Resho, the whole, it needs a super amount of imagination to work.
Except...
It only needs...
Except, now that it's been used, they all have a good idea of what it looks like. They all have the visualization.
No, but they never said that they were using that that visualization.
But they are. Here's the problem.
Hikari is one of the ones with the least imagination.
Here's the thing. He doesn't need imagination for it. Light's already shown him what it does.
Isn't Mio?
No. Mio is like the least, but Hikari's second.
Yeah, there's the thing. Light has already shown them how it can work. They don't need imagination to start it up anymore. They already know.
No, I know, but that's what I'm trying to say. My point was the whole it requires a Superman imagination to work was apparently only to first time activate.
To make a form.
Now they can all use it.
Now
which
that Light
makes sense.
Yeah.
No, I'm okay with that. I just wanted to point that out.
Imagine it took a shit ton of it took their most imaginative mind to come up with what it can do. Now that they've done that and they've established it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So Light was the one who not only activated it but decided its form.
The thing could probably make any form. Anybody could do whatever individual thing with it they wanted. But Light has already given it a form that they've all seen. So their imagination, what they imagine it to be, what they imagine the hyperform to be, is what they've already been shown by light.
I see what you're saying.
What this show is doing, I find, and this is something that I kind of don't like, and I'm watching, but what I've been shown tells me this. They're treating imagination as a quantifiable thing.
Yeah, I know.
It's far more a complex notion than that, than they're treating.
So is magic, but Mad Ranger did that.
I don't find that. I find they are treating it as what it is. In a lot of cases, it's not a matter of, yeah, no, you have more, you have less. In most of the actual practical applications, it's a very, like in this case, like I'm saying.
You have it or you don't.
No, it's, well, there's a little bit of that in the way you have to be, you know, at least somewhat of an imaginative person to
but
be able to
just
become
it.
A computer.
It's just like real life. Let's take D&D, for example. People are better at it than others because people have a better imagination than others. It's not necessarily something quantifiable as just there is a level of how much more imaginative someone is than another.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's just a matter of, I find they're saying it, but in practice, they're doing it right. Mm-hmm. Like, I say, you're correct in how they're describing it to work verbally,
but only
is
from
what
a dialogue
you're saying.
Point of view.
Yeah, only
from a dialogue, only
from a dialogue point of view. In the use, in the way they're using it, they are treating it properly.
Yeah.
It's so they went in dialogue, the conductor went into such great detail about how the Hyperesha needed a huge amount of imagination to be run, it needed this, and then now that Light has shown them how to use it, he's shown them a form with it, everyone can just use that form.
So these are intelligent, imaginative writers. They're just really shitty at it.
They're just really bad dialogue.
They're bad at dialogue.
They're just shitty at
what
it.
I was really impressed with was the fact that just Hikari was just like, okay, let's fucking do it. Chuck.
No hesitation.
Launch it, find, destroy monster.
No hesitation. I'm just going
to pick
this shit up.
Yeah, because he watched Light do it. He knows what to do. He's just going to get it done.
So here's the thing I was thinking this week. Our usual whole thing, we have this whole habit of arguing belt mechanics. You can't argue belt mechanics or anything else in this show.
No.
Because they've established that their powers work however the fuck they want them to.
Hyperesha.
Interchangeable.
The new deformed shield.
Imagination.
Yeah.
Their powers do whatever the fuck they want them to.
Going into, I mean, since I feel like we're kind of reaching the end of what we're talking about here anyway, just as while we're on the topic, in regards to what is in the preview for next episode.
I want to know how the fuck they do this.
I'm not looking forward to.
We're talking, of course, about 3 and 5, however you'd like to put
Sango
that.
Yeah, so
Gogo.
In the preview, we see that Tokyu Sango and Gogo, yellow and pink, somehow share the Hyperesha and end up conjoined while using it.
I think that is how we will see all 5 of them in the battleizers at the same time.
Oh,
they
God.
Will be
all
a train
5 of them in
connected.
A line. How awkward would that be?
Very
awkward enough to be like end boss material.
The
they would have
we got
okay,
imagination
for, all connected at the shoulder.
For that to work, it would have to be just them standing there, not actually fighting, but just like imagination beaming the shit out of something.
Why?
No,
why
they
not
do. They stand
the
there. No,
this
they stand there in the line.
Imagery up the
ass. No, they stand there in the line, all looking
because
at Hyperesha's, and they imagine themselves
the
fighting.
The Hyperesha is shoulder armor that is shaped like a train.
So the train runs this
so
way.
So put them back and forth
the front,
and turn
front,
into compartments.
No.
It's
like
the
front of the
train,
dragon
back
shield.
Of the train.
Think of it as the
it's
form
sideways.
Dragon shield.
Linking up.
So they're connected at the shoulders.
That's
okay.
So gay.
I know!
This thing is
Paul.
Full of train imagery. This should be Conga's Line of Doom.
Paul.
That's what their roll call is!
Here's a prime example of how the Hyperesha is
and
described.
Just in the background, like, oh shit, right,
Say someone decided, hey, I'm going to attempt at a Green Ranger cosplay. Decided to forge an actual dragon shield out of gold using blacksmith and horribly fucked it up. And made it look like a train, somehow. That's what the Hyperesha armor is. It's a deformed dragon shield.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds gay.
It is.
But also, honestly,
I mean, no disrespect to gay people out there.
As far as what I've seen in the preview for next week's episode, yes, the Hyper Tokyu Sango and Gogo.
Wigs.
Yeah,
wigs.
I'm not looking
playing
forward to next week's episode because they
everyone.
Have these weird fucking like
playing card wigs.
Yeah.
On
and
everybody.
Hold on.
On the helmets.
There's one more thing I want to mention about this episode. So we didn't mention that, yes, like Schwartz, he actually successfully gets away with the drill Russia.
Yeah.
So, and Akira actually gets injured, and he's like in bandages at the end of the
bad.
Thing. And somehow they manage to turn this horrible, crippling loss that now prevents them from going to Shadow Towns into, it's okay, we'll do better, it's a good happy ending.
We can get it back.
To the next town. Why are you so happy? You lost horribly.
Meh.
They're upbeat individuals that ain't
they're a bunch of fucking morons. Imagine they get it back.
They're independent black women who don't need no man.
Any disbelief about anything or anything you question about this show, my response will always be imagination.
Thanks, Aaron Zephyr.
Imagination. You're welcome.
So that's Tokyuger.
Fuck this show.
It looks like we're headed... Like, I like to think of Tokyuger's quality as, like, a train riding on a track that's going up and down hills. We've reached the top of the hill. We're going down again.
We're going down, and then the end of the show is going to be a train wreck.
Yep.
I hope not.
Like...
Shimpots, fuck you.
The show was going uphill since Akira showed up, but now we're headed back down.
No, it's had a couple bumps since Akira showed up. It has.
Yeah.
It has not been consistently decent.
So, next week... It'll be very special because we are all decided to watch the finale of Gaim together and then get our initial reactions.
I gotta find something else to watch at work on Monday.
So, yeah.
Oh,
so
no. I'm sure
next,
you'll find
for
something.
The next week, I gotta avoid.
But everything's ending.
Watch reading stuff on Twitter, Facebook, even watching The Raw because I do watch The Raw, the episodes.
So we as the five cast rangers, are going to sit together, watch the finale of Gaim together, and record it. And possibly release it as some premium Cast Ranger content.
We made the joke about this a little while ago, and actually I have been doing some work on the Gaim Christmas album.
Oh, Christ. Cool.
Good, I want to see this, because I had some ideas, too.
Yeah, we can just go back and listen to that episode for more ideas.
Gaim's dreaming of a white rider, just saying.
Yeah.
You're a mean one, Mr. Meech.
Well, that would be from the perspective of Oren.
I saw Roshiro killing Sigurd. In between two pillars last night.
In between two rock pillars last night.
Yep.
But yeah, it's just an Oren ballad about how he's dreaming of a white rider.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's brilliant. I like it. Okay. That is a thing that could happen.
All right. Bye, everybody.
As always, subscribe to us on Podbean and iTunes and YouTube. We love you all. Thanks for listening. Send us some comments, you fuckers. Good night.